Washington, D.C. Acknowledge me.
Chris Russell on the Team 980.
I'm not trying to be a jerk. Yes, Kevin Sheehan, it is a Windbag Wednesday.
Oh, Kevin.
Coach Sheehan with the nice lead-in, the funny lead-in with Denton Day.
Love it.
As everybody enjoys barbecue, it should be noted that none of us over here on the other side of the aisle.
The smell has seeped in.
Yes.
I was part of the barbecue parade that was brought in here. Mm-hmm. I assisted and I didn't realize what I was
doing. You opened the door.
Yeah.
You let the barbecue in.
I literally let the barbecue in.
And didn't get any of it.
It didn't get any of it. That's how it goes. That's what happens when you're the youngest in charge. But the youngest in charge, this is our first Victory Windbag Wednesday.
That's a very good point.
I have talked to you more than 3 hours already between
it's been a lot of
Sunday and today. But that's what happens when you have a show that has continuity, flow.
Matt, what did I say when I was getting barraged by CK and Grant for my Twitter feed and for not knowing and understanding Twitter? I said, it's been a lot of me and Linnell. I didn't say that. Yeah, see, I said it's been a lot of Linnell.
Well, I guess that's our perfect way to say hello to Matt.
Exactly.
Hello, Matt. Way to
Matty Ice Matt on the here, other side of the glass. Linnell Willingham, the youngest in charge, is here. It is a Windbag Wednesday, much to the chagrin of Coach Sheehan,
who said
he listens all the time, but he didn't realize it was Windbag Wednesday. So Denton Day had to correct him, and I would just
Denton's our guy.
You know,
so is Coach Sheehan.
I would just say this: I appreciate both, and you don't have to listen. I mean, Kevin's a very, very busy guy. He's got lots of things going on. He's got lots of dignitaries in his life. He's got a very successful podcast. He's got to get on the golf course with Scott Van Pelton.
Clean
he's got
the
a
yacht.
Lot of things.
He's got
to clean up the yacht. There you go. Thankfully for you, I don't have a yacht to clean. I've got my own self to take care of. But anyway, we're not going to talk about our proclivities off the air. We're going to talk about lots of things on the air. But the first thing that we wanted to open up with on the show is just like news that I would have never thought I would be opening up the show with on a Wednesday in the middle of football season.
In 2024 is
yeah,
what I would
add. And it just crossed, yeah. And I was like, huh. And it's weird because I spent part of the morning listening to Mike Shanahan on Adam Schefter's podcast. Mm-hmm. And I don't listen regularly to Schefter's podcast because I just don't have time. But in particular, he was stumping for Mike to be in the Hall of Fame. And I reached out to Shefty as I don't want to say often, but as I sometimes do, exchange
pleasantries every now and then.
Yeah, and Shefty responded, you know, within 10 minutes or whatever. And I said, you know, hopefully we can, you know, one day be in Canton celebrating Mike and his whole. And then, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes later, I look and Schefter's reporting that Adrian Wojnarowski is not. At that point, the way he worded it was not leaving ESPN. It was he's joining St. Bonaventure University to be like their basketball GM or whatever. Okay. And I'm like, the first thing I thought was, this has got to be a fake Adam Schefter tweet, number one. Number two, Adrian Wojnarowski needs another job? He needs another paycheck? I didn't realize he was retiring from ESPN.
Yeah, and I think that was the bigger part of the news, but I looked at it immediately, but at first that didn't come through.
Yeah,
exactly. But the way I look at it, right, is like, wow, is this his way? Are we going to see the first, I guess it wouldn't be the first, insider turned NBA GM? Because you know that this is the startup. I don't know if St. Bonnie is his alma mater.
No,
or
it
not?
Is his
okay,
alma
so
mater.
So it is his alma mater.
I don't think this is a turn to become a GM in the NBA. I think this is I'm tired of working 100 hours a week, and I'm going to go and work 60 or 50 and cash a nice paycheck
yeah,
and help
but
out
the
my
itch,
alma mater.
The itch is always going to be there with him for the pro
game. Yeah, I got to be honest with you. When you get as old as me, and I think Woj is like right around my age, roughly, maybe a little bit older, you lose a lot of that ish, man. You lose a lot of that. Like,
Chris, you're always scratching. I itch
because I've got anxiety and because I always think bed bugs are going to get me or some like weird creature is going to get me.
I don't have that problem.
Yeah, that I have. I don't have the itch to do any more, as you fully know.
I'm your itch right now. I turned down things and tried to help you.
I appreciate it, and all of that. I mean, I still do the Infinity Sports Radio updates from the Commanders games, which, you know, quite honestly, is a whole handful and whatever.
But that's you scratching your itch. But I think.
Right.
I don't know. We'll see.
Wojnarowski is retiring from
any job, though.
Now,
Chris,
I will say this.
But to take that, that's not going to be some massive drop-off, nope. I think, in workload.
I will say this. He's going to go to St. Bonaventure in little old Olean, New York. I've been to Olean, New York.
You What's probably it called?
Olean.
Oilean?
No, Olean.
Olean.
O-L-E-A-N.
I just wanted to hear you spell.
Olean.
I heard what you said.
New York. I've been to Olean.
Olean.
I've been near the campus of St. Bonaventure. It's a good little basketball program in the armpit of New York State. Adrian Wojnarowski can be happy. He can be fine, whatever. He's still going to break some stories. Or he's going to feed his replacement, or he's going to feed Schefter. Schefter has
broken
NBA stories.
Do you think,
he's going to get texts, and he's, you know, you don't just lose your cell phone. You don't just lose your contacts. What you do is.
You just open up a whole can of worms. Well, that would be the new. If Schefter can start. Reporting on the NBA.
Well, he has at times.
Doesn't that like take a big fist to the arms race between him, Shams, and all the other guys?
And here's the other thing. It's very possible that Shams, who quit the stadium or whatever, and he was Adrian Wojnarowski's protege at Yahoo before Woj went over to ESPN. Assuming they still have a good relation, I don't know. You know, maybe Shams just replaces Woj at ESPN. I have no idea. I don't care enough, to be honest with you. My point is I think everybody was floored by this. It wasn't like rumored or anything like that.
It's interesting.
It doesn't mean anything to most people other than, you know, the whole Woj bomb thing. We were just having a discussion about Twitter and Twitter followers, and I said, you know, my followers haven't significantly grown past 30,000 because I don't break news anymore. You know, whereas if you break news like Woj, if you break news like Rappaport, like Garofolo, like Schefter, like Jay Glazer, or even on a smaller level, J.P. Finley, Grant, who breaks a lot of news on both baseball and the NFL, if you do that, you're going to go whoosh.
Yeah.
In terms of followers.
Yeah, it helps your portfolio.
That's where it affects people probably the most, is people are like, hey, man, there's a rumor on X player, X team in the NBA. What's Woj saying? You know, so that's that. So anyway, congratulations to him. I hope he's happier. I hope he's stress-free. I tell you this, I have no idea. I mean, outside of the $10 million paycheck, I have no idea how Adam Schefter deals with it. I would never want to do that. But anyway, this just in, though. From
really?
Yes. From one of our good followers. Breaking news. Longfellow _ T-Wad has weighed in on Adrian Wojnarowski's replacement.
Oh, my gosh.
Quote, this may be, spelled maybe, not may be, separated. This may be one of my last shows with at WrestleMania 621, as I expect at ESPN to be calling about at Woj ESPN's vacancy. In the meantime, listen on at Team 980 as I watched all 22 for the Commanders 16 times so far. The YIC movement is more than just a t-shirt. Yes!
I honestly don't
Whoever
even know
Whoever is
what
running
to say.
At Longfellow _ T-Wad.
Did they block me? Because CK. I can no longer see their tweets.
I don't think so. I don't think CK's that funny.
CK doesn't have enough damn time.
I think I know who it is, but I'm not going to expose him.
I think it's the man behind the glass.
I wish it was me.
I don't think it's Matt. He's not that funny.
I thought it was Athen. Athen says it's not him.
It's not Athen. He's not that funny.
So yet. Who's...
It's not me. I'm not that funny.
So
although
you know
I'm funnier,
who's running the account?
I think I know. I don't know.
You see what I mean, Matt? This is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think
you're constantly out to try.
Maybe it's a comedian who works at the station.
Sabotage.
I mean, listen, there's been fake C. Russells and all that, and that was absolutely people at the radio station and people in the media. But this account is on it. I'm just telling you, this guy's got more time than he knows what to do with, and he's pretty damn funny. So I appreciate it. But anyway,
I actually don't find it funny anymore.
We do have actual legitimate breaking news. As I predicted at 5 o'clock this morning when I retweeted the interview that he did on the Infinity Sports Radio Network on my cell phone, Austin Seibert is the NFC Special Teams Player of the Week for week two. So congratulations, 7 of 7, field goal. I will say this before we get actually started with the show. The story behind that is pretty damn amazing, and I slept on it a little bit. I know they saw him at that Jets joint practice that you were at in Florham Park, New Jersey. I don't know if you paid any attention to Austin Seibert, who was the backup to Greg Zuerlein, who was just basically in camp competition, but they liked what they saw that day. They liked what they saw in the game 2 days later, and they said, hey, Zuerlein's likely to win that job. Duh, right?
He's Greg Zuerlein.
That means, hey, this guy's probably going to be coming available, and he's on the top of our list. So kudos
credit to them.
We're at the mercy of the evaluator.
Yeah.
Dan Quinn gave Adam Peters and Lance Newmark all the credit, and I who am I to say that they don't deserve credit? They spotted Austin Seibert, and one game in, 2 weeks into the season, on the fifth place kicker since the DQ and AP era has taken over, the Commanders, for now, have a actual kicker who made 7 out of 7 field goals and obviously scored all
does?
The points.
You know what that does? The second week in a row that Washington has had a NFL Player of the Week, Rookie of the Week in week one, Jaden Daniels.
Mm-hmm.
Special Teams Player of the Week this week, Austin Seibert. It honestly, the writing is on the wall, and I'm going to be the first one to plant my flag in the ground. We were talking about it on the phone as we were getting ready for the show. Washington's got a massive game coming up Monday night for all parties involved with this operation. And I would even say for you all as a fan base in terms of what the narrative is going to be after this week. You're in prime time for the first time. You get to get your rookie quarterback on a national stage for the first time, and everyone's already licking him like an ice cream cone because he deserves it right now. I think the national perspective is a little bit interesting in terms of how he's viewed, but even outside of the quarterback, how are you going to be known the rest of the way? What is 2024 going to be for you? I think Monday night is going to go a long way in shaping that.
I got a question for you. Did you steal licking like an ice cream cone from Doc? Because he used the same term yesterday.
And
I had not heard him say it, but I thought maybe because you've stolen every concept and idea from me that you stole that from him as well.
I can never just give you all my honest opinion without some sort of just uppercut.
We like to have fun and bust chops on this show, right? We don't get the barbecue, but we like to have a few barbs back and forth. Actually, Matt got barbecue, I think. He went over there and he said, screw those guys. I'm going to get
free food.
Didn't
bring any back for us?
And of course he didn't bring any food for us. Yeah, you know, they're going to make fun of me if I go over there, so I won't go over there.
Well,
anyway.
Lord knows what happens if I go over there.
That's a whole different world there. I would. You might get peanut punched for an all different reason. He might Benjamin St. Juice you. But anyway, moving on beyond that, you said it's a huge game.
It's
a huge spot.
Massive.
It is. I will tell you this. Anytime you're on Monday Night Football,
it's
right,
big.
It doesn't have the same cachet it once used to have,
but
it still does because it's the only – well, it's not the only game this Monday.
That's what I was about to say. It doesn't even really have the full
– But normally, it has the cachet, and it is on ABC nationally, right? It's not even on ESPN, which ABC is obviously in many, many, many more homes.
Exactly.
And therefore has more eyeballs and so on and so forth. Now, that being said, for what it could mean for Jaden Daniels and the way he's viewed, if he plays well, if he's valiant, if he's gutty, if he's gritty, all that stuff, I think this game could go a long way if they could find a way to win.
Yeah.
And essentially bury the Cincinnati Bengals at 0-3 in their home stadium.
Changes the perception of you nationally, I think.
It changes the perception of not only Jaden Daniels, but the entire organization.
Exactly.
From start to finish. I mean, think about Dan Quinn, who, you know, even here is not held in the highest of regards,
not
right?
Not at all. Not yet.
Adam Peters is still a name that in football circles people know and people respect. But because he's never been a GM, people don't know and respect. if that makes sense.
Correct.
All of a sudden, if they go in and find a way to beat Cincinnati, who's desperate at 0-2 and should have beaten the Kansas City Chiefs the other day at Arrowhead and should have, you know, could have beaten the New England Patriots if a couple of things didn't go wrong, and again, they did. If they go into Cincinnati and beat a desperate team and they're 2-1, and especially if it's a convincing victory, which I don't believe it would be, but if they find a way to win by one measly point, the whole tenor of the conversation about the Washington Commanders,
changes,
never mind Jaden Daniels,
changes completely. And I think that could be a good thing, and it could be a bad thing. You could be like the Dallas Cowboys, who read their own press clippings in Week 1, and people were having, you know, different conversations about them after they spanked the Browns, and then New Orleans completely put a dagger in their chest and ripped their heart out, punching them in the mouth right off the line of scrimmage, running the ball the way that they did. It could be bad if Washington goes and wins against Cincinnati, especially if recent history has anything to do with that. Feels like they can never capitalize off of big-time wins as long as I've been rooting for this team. We're talking about Washington.
Yeah, sustaining success has been a major
impossible problem. It's
been
impossible.
Although they did win 2 in a row to start last year.
So then that opens up that can of worms, too. If you do win, that's another opportunity for this regime to separate itself from the mediocrity that has existed with them.
I will tell you this. If they find a way, and we're not going to stick with this, guys. We're going to get into a Daron Payne and Jonathan Allen conversation in just a sec, so just bear with us. If they find a way to win this game and they're 2-1, not heading home, they're heading directly to Arizona and setting up shop in Arizona for the week because the NFL bent them over and shoved a 10-foot pole up their bippy. And said, "Oh no! We want you to play in Cincinnati, which is in."
But you're the only one. You're the only one that complains about that.
Yeah, so I know because I'm the smartest guy alive on planet Earth. I mean, just like they put the absolute screws to the Jets.
Yeah, the Jets are. Yeah, they got 3 games in 19 days.
19 days, or 11 days.
Yeah, 11 days.
11
I'm sorry.
Days.
11 days,
including one on the West Coast. You want to talk about putting the screws to them? I mean, it's not even as bad in Washington, but it's pretty damn bad to ask a team to play late on Monday night in Cincinnati and then to fly to Arizona, assuming that they were going to do that. And that's a pretty big project. There's a lot of logistics that go into that. Okay, never mind playing Kyler Murray and Marvin Harrison Jr. four days later.
Chris, that's a part of it. That's why Tress Way makes fun of you every time he brings it up, because it's like, every time you bring it up, it's because it's like, I mean, who really cares outside of you?
It's a part of it, but it's not easy.
All the good teams play the primetime games.
My point being is if they win somehow on Monday night, that removes a ton of pressure for next Sunday in Arizona.
It does, but then it also sets up for a massive letdown too. But I guess you can't call it.
It does, but I wouldn't have
Cliff's revenge game, too. Don't forget about that.
Yeah, that's fair. But if you lose Monday night, which is what I think most people are going to expect, and because the Vegas line was set at 7.5,
I give you a number.
Everything.
Yeah. That sends you the number.
Yeah.
It's 6.5-point dogs plus.
It opened at 7.5.
Are undefeated this year against the spread.
I've heard that, but which again proves that.
That's because it's early in the season and you don't know anything.
Right, but it also proves that Vegas doesn't know anything either.
Exactly.
Vegas is just guessing. Vegas is just, you know, paying, pin the tail on the donkey.
And I think that's the important caveat about everything that we've seen to this point with Washington, good and bad. It's still the first 2 weeks of the season, and we don't know who they are yet. I made a declaration the other night on TV saying, look, I think they found their offensive identity for sure. I think, and I've said this all offseason long, so you know I'm going to go with it when we see it for the first time, exotic smash mouth football. Unless you try to sit
put
there.
Put that
and
on the T-shirt,
you can put it
baby.
On a T-shirt. You can do whatever you want to do.
I heard.
The jet motion, the screens.
In the DC News Now clip that I watched overnight. Exotic Smash Mouth football, put it on a T-shirt.
Oh. No way.
Wait, listen. Listen.
Oh, gosh. Matt, you are too damn quick.
Banners. Exotic.
You are a dog.
I mean, Matt turned that around.
That's crazy.
But I saw that at 4 in the morning, I think, and I don't remember when I saw it. I see a lot of things at 4 in the morning.
Yeah, what the hell are you doing?
I'm up and down all night, man. I'm telling you.
He's up in it all. Did you hear what
I'm telling you, man. I've got a lot of things going on in my feeble little brain. Anyway, the bottom line is, yeah, exotic smash mouth football. You also said we're at the mercy of the evaluator 4,858 times.
Well,
and now you want to kill the evaluator. But that's neither here nor there. Here's what we're at the mercy of. Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne. That's who we're at the mercy of, and that's what we're going to attack next is how do we get the most bang for the buck out of two guys that are exorbitantly paid? We'll tackle that next on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. Hi, good to have you with us. As we're watching TV during the break, got a lot of Commanders flavor. Austin Eckler right now on Good Morning Football. I think this was from yesterday, I believe, right? Because he won the Scepter Award or whatever the hell they do. Is that right?
Angry Runs.
Angry Runner,
what did
whatever.
You call it? The Scepter. You're
it's
so
like,
out to lunch, as you like to say.
And then Brian Robinson was just on. Yeah. And Austin Seibert just won NFC Special Teams Player of the Week.
Get a lot of love nationally.
Jaden Daniels won the Pepsi Rookie of the Week last week and is out there campaigning for it again this week. I think that comes out today. I could be wrong on that. Maybe it's tomorrow. I don't know. Either way, a lot of Commanders love right now. A lot of good feelings. Even though it was a tough win, what have you. Except for two guys, specifically, Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne.
Yeah.
Because Chris, everybody looks, and we're going to expand the argument to a bigger picture defensive perspective in a little bit, but everybody looks at the Commanders' defensive woes right now as starting and ending largely with the fact that Daron Payne and the jury, there's a lot of different mixed opinions on Daron Payne. And Jonathan Allen, and there's no mixed opinions on Jonathan Allen. Those two guys are being blamed for a lot of the defensive problems and woes of the Washington Commanders through two games. And I would say this, some, maybe more than some, is more than fair. And I would ask you, is A, the criticism fair, and B, how do they get the most bang for their buck considering they're paying these guys a veritable fortune?
Is the criticism fair is where I think we got to start with. To me, it is simply based on the price tag, right? When you have two defensive tackles, who the last time I checked were both in the top 12 of AAV, you have to dominate through hell or high water, in my opinion. And when I say dominate, I understand there are schematic things that you can do to try and mitigate their impact. But to think that every top defensive player on the defensive line around the NFL is not getting double teamed, that's how you beat those guys. You double team them. You got to be able to beat double teams. And I think right now, that is, if I was going to nitpick, and that's what this is, they have to be better beating double teams. They're not doing a good job of it right now. And their impact has been lessened as a result. But in terms of how you get the most bang for your buck, you have a theory that I believe in pretty firmly. Shocker that we're agreeing with each other. But, like, big picture, I go back to just roster construction and how much they have invested on the interior of the defensive line. And that is their plan, I guess, for this year, was for these two to raise hell and make everyone else around them better. And they simply haven't gotten that the first 2 weeks. So I wonder, one, does the philosophy and plan change as the season moves on? And then two, like, what do they think internally about what they've gotten from Daron and John? Because I think if you're looking at it from an objective point of view and there's no bias in it, they haven't been good enough. They haven't been good enough. You can give me all the double team numbers that you want. I'm looking at the defensive tackle pass rush win rate rankings right now via ESPN's analytics. John Allen's ranked 19th. Daron Payne's not even on the picture. Not even in the picture. So in the double team rate of John Allen right here is 69%. The highest double team rate is Christian Wilkins, who's at 69%, yet he's 6th, and John Allen's 19th. You see what I'm saying? So he's getting double teamed as well, and he's making plays because he is the top defensive tackle, one of those guys in that conversation. We put John and Deron in that conversation, but statistically, we haven't seen that since 2022. Last year was a dud for both of those guys.
Right, and statistics and analytics can be different and tell you different things.
We use it for context. I was going to tell you, they're not making impact.
I want to expand upon that more, and I'm going to give you how I think they could get the most bang for the buck out of Jonathan Allen and Deron Payne. And again, this is just from my perspective. I don't know if I'm talking out of my ass or not. The bottom line is, I think I have a potential, I don't want to say solution, but a potential platform where things can get a lot better, because it's very clear, even before you read what you just read, they're not getting bang for their buck.
They're not.
Out of two guys that, let me give you this number real quickly before we go to the bottom of the hour trending alert, two guys that make equal amounts against the salary cap for the Washington Commanders this year. 21.61 for Deron Payne, not exactly equal, 21.44 for Jonathan Allen.
And those are the two highest?
So within 200,000, well, no, Terry McLaurin is even higher,
another problem,
and we're going to tackle that in the 2 o'clock hour. The bottom line is, they both make, one makes 21.6 against the cap. Not, right. I don't care about cash flow. They're all rich. They're all rich, and they're all overpaid. Against the cap, Deron Payne counts 21.61. Jonathan Allen this year, 21.44. So within $150,000 of each other. And nobody, I don't care if you are the biggest jock sniffer in the world, and there are plenty of you out there on Twitter, and you know who I'm talking about. There is nobody.
A jock sniffer,
there is nobody that can say they are getting bang for their buck.
You can't.
I'll let that rest right there. I'll tell you my solution potentially when we return on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. All right, let's start with the Mystics. How about that? Game was last night here on the Team 980. Tomorrow night, one more game left, and guess who comes to town? Caitlin Clark and the Indiana Fever. Now, why is that important? They lost 87-71 to the New York Liberty last night, but the Mystics are tied with Chicago, one game behind Atlanta, heading into the final game of the regular season. So, obviously, they still have a chance, depending on how they shake things out tomorrow night at Capital One Arena, to make the WNBA playoffs after such a brutal start. We opened the show talking about big NBA news that had nothing to do with the NBA on the court. Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, Mr. Wojbaum himself, retiring from ESPN and from NBA coverage, and now has become the general manager of the men's basketball program at St. Bonaventure, where he is an alum. Of course, St. Bonaventure nestled in Western New York, about an hour and a half or so from Buffalo. Meanwhile, the Commanders, with kind of an extra day to prepare here, they'll get back at it in earnest tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock on the field as they begin on-field preparations for the Cincinnati Bengals, who are 0-2. Nats trying to avoid the sweep tonight in New York after getting drubbed last night. 7-10 the first pitch, 106-7 the fan, and the Odyssey app, and that's what's trending. All right, good to have you with us here on a Windbag Wednesday. Along the way, on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app, the youngest in charge. No, that's not Toby Altizer. Sorry, Doc. That is for at least today, because we're being nice. We're in a generous mood.
For at least today.
Linnell Willingham.
You must not have your headlights on.
Is with us. The headlights were on today because of the rain. Anyway, a little inside radio there. So we'll get to your calls in a sec, but here's where we wanted to go. So I just gave you the salary cap numbers of Deron Payne and Jonathan Allen. Okay, correct. Again, they count for, between the two of them, $43 million worth of the Commander's salary cap this year. Of the defense, in which, according to, again, overthecap.com, the defense counts for almost $107 million. So 43 out of $107 million is Deron Payne and Jonathan Allen, right? $43 million out of roughly $238 million, the entire team, is Jonathan Allen and Deron Payne. So how do you get the most bang for your buck? Well, look, you can say all you want about how many double teams they faced, and that showed up on tape. I think John Keim has some numbers that you cited about how it was like the most pass drops with six man protections and 10, I believe, with...
Sunday, Giants had 19 pass attempts using six or more blockers. That was the second highest this week.
Oh, six. It's six or more, not six.
Six or more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Second highest in the NFL.
Six is an extra.
Yeah, absolutely. And then wasn't there one with seven? A component
yes, and they
of
also
was...
led the league with 10 pass attempts with seven
okay,
blockers.
So clearly, by any definition, the Giants were using a lot of max protect schemes, right?
Because of...
Which makes sense, right? Even though they rebuilt their offensive line, they know they have Daniel Jones, who, by the way, I take umbrage with everybody that
and I don't
says
know why
he sucks,
you make yourself
awful.
Sound crazy when you do that.
He's a mental
he's
nutcase.
He's not good, Chris.
He tore his knee up.
I don't give a darn,
he tore
Chris.
His knee up. He's good.
He's got weapons
he's
and he's
fine.
Bad. He's got
he's
weapons
fine.
And he's bad. That's
he's fine.
He's the problem.
How
in
good?
New York.
How good was he 2 years?
Wasn't
a year
very
and a half
good.
Ago? A year and a half ago, he wasn't very good.
Throwing for 2,700 yards, 15 touchdowns, and 5 picks is not good in my books.
Okay. How many rushing yards did he have? Did he win a road playoff game
against,
in Minnesota
against the worst defense in the NFL?
But the bottom line is nobody's saying he's going to Canton. But this
you
notion
act like he's
this
one of the worst three quarterbacks
Daniel
in the NFL.
Daniel Jones is Bryce Young. Or is or Zach Wilson
is ridiculous.
He's one of
the worst three starters in the NFL.
Okay. Anyway, either way, they were using max protect schemes, right? So we all understand, and again, if you watch the tape, even if you don't watch the All-22, even if you don't know what you're looking at, you can if you just focus in on Daron Payne and Jonathan Allen, they're getting double-teamed, they're getting chipped, they're getting rubbed, they're getting all sorts of things. But here's the deal. When generally you are double-teaming one guy, that means somebody else should be open. When you're double-teaming two guys... If you're double-teaming two guys on every snap or a lot of snaps or what have you, somebody else should be definitely drawing, if not one-on-one, a beyond favorable matchup. And we all know this. If that was the case, the Commanders didn't capitalize. However.
They didn't.
What I want to say is this. In order for them to get bang for their buck out of Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne, and I think it's too tall of a task, again, they're not going to be able to get 10 sacks plus out of these two guys each. That's not going to happen. I know Daron had the 11.5. I know John's had some years, 9, 9.5. That's not going to happen, honestly, in my opinion. I'd be very surprised if each of them, or even one of them, quite honestly, gets 10-plus sacks. But that being said, that's not the only way you measure people. My point being is the way they get the most bang for their buck is, yes, we talked about the defensive ends, but here's where I'm going. If they can get Johnny Newton to play more than 11 or 12 snaps and to stop breaking feet that don't exist and to actually stay on the football field. And I know he made his debut and I know he was on a pitch count and I know he only played 12 snaps the other day and didn't really make an impact. If they can get Johnny Newton ramped up to 25, 30 snaps, I don't know, say by the time the Arizona game is in the books and one quarter of the season is, I think that is going to allow Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne either by sheer power and dictation or by scheme to be freed up to make more plays, both as a pass rusher especially, but also maybe even in run blocking. Because
well, that's where they got to get better at. I think the pass rushing element of it is not as important to me as the run stopping.
Well, the pass rushing element is pretty big when you don't have it coming from your defensive ends.
It is, Chris, but the main philosophy of any NFL defense, you talk to any coordinator, is to stop the run first. And if that's going to be a problem, you got to earn the right to rush the pass.
You're right, but you also know that Dan Quinn's defense was not good at stopping the run in Dallas.
And it's a schematic thing because of what they're asking. When you allow your defensive tackles to haul ass upfield the way that they do, it makes it a lot harder to hold your gap and to not widen, and it makes the run fits more difficult for the safeties. But if the safeties were actually interested in making tackles, it'd be a different conversation.
We're going to get into that coming up shortly.
It's layered,
but here's the thing. I agree with you that it is a run stop first league. Every coach will tell you that. I had a coach yesterday tell me that. Okay. Yeah. Again, I like people think I'm too soft on defensive coordinators because I like Joe Barry and Jim Haslett. They would tell you that. Greg Blosch would tell you that when he was here.
Greg Blosch is dial it up. Baby.
Greg Minuski would say the same thing. Bill Belichick, the greatest defensive mind, would tell you the same thing. But here's the thing. In order for them to get the kind of impact that they need for the money that they've paid. And again, it's not a cash flow thing.
It's a cap issue thing. Yeah.
They are counting on these guys to not be fine.
But
they're not even fine in a lot of cases. They are counting on these guys to be
dominant,
game
great.
Wreckers.
Yes, which
one
is not
of them,
an unreasonable
both of
ask.
Them, and neither one of them is game wreckers.
It's not an unreasonable ask. I just think it's one of those situations where put yourselves in Adam Peters and company's shoes. You know what you know about these guys based off of tape, right? Then you get in the building and you're around them on a day-to-day basis. Then you get to see them in practice. Then you get to get their testing numbers in the weight room and all your advanced numbers on who they are as athletes. Mm-hmm. And maybe your perception changes of who they are and what you think their ceiling could be. Because I think realistically, coming in, they're thinking when they take over this job, oh, we've got two war daddies in the middle of our defense that is going to make everything else go. They've got to work on, to me, and this is where your Johnny Newton stuff comes up, the defense is built around these two guys raising hell. That is what the overall number one thing they're relying on. And it helps the back end. It helps the linebackers and all of that. But in order for them, like you said, to get the most bang for their buck out of them, they need Johnny Newton not just to play more snaps, but the alignment stuff where you see Deron Payne lining up outside shade of the guard, where you see – we were having this conversation earlier. Realistically speaking – they set this defense up. They built this roster to where those are our two best pass rushers. They will help out our ends. Realistically speaking, if you had Johnny Newton healthy and you can play, maybe you're playing Phil Mathis and Johnny Newton on the inside together. That's why I thought they should have kept KJ Henry because he's got the inside-outside stuff. But Deron Payne and John Allen, to me, are better defensive ends.
Wait a second. I was the one that said they should have kept KJ Henry.
I think you were right. They should have kept KJ Henry. All but right, is that what you're gonna stop the show?
Just curious.
But no, I think Deron Payne, realistically speaking, is like a better edge rusher than Dorrance Armstrong.
Well, I will say, Hoffman credit because back in February when we did the 106.7 Team 980 Live, I remember sitting backstage with him and we did this on the air. We were talking about Deron Payne being used as a defensive end and as a pass rushing defensive end in this scheme, and that's where I first started thinking, oh, maybe they will go and draft a defensive tackle
and maybe they ultimately will
put Deron at the 4-3 end and try and use him and his athleticism and his speed and a little more space, maybe line him up, not a true wide nine, but like...
Outside shade of the tackle.
And then I thought, and then I watched Johnny Newton tape. And here's where I wanted to get to. When Johnny Newton ramps up from 12 snaps in his first NFL game and things are slowing down for him, say he's playing 25 snaps. Maybe it's 30 snaps. Mm-hmm. I don't know. If you can line him, and I don't know if you're going to line him and Mathis up necessarily, other than just maybe to give those two a break.
Right. Sub package.
I think what you can do is put not only Johnny Newton and, say, Jonathan Allen paired as the interior defensive tackles and Deron at left end or Deron at right end for Cleveland Farrell, who everybody's going to think he's a great pass rusher because he's got two sacks. Trust me, he ain't a great pass rusher.
He stays in his lane.
That's fine.
That's how he gets the cleanup sacks.
But what I'm saying is, I think when Johnny Newton gets ramped up, you can either put him at interior tackle or what I saw at Illinois – Johnny Newton lined up over the right tackle a bunch.
Really? Okay.
And destroyed.
See,
destroyed right tackles. Ate them for lunch, attacking the inside shoulder, attacking the outside shoulder, and running over them. So here's how you're, I think, I hope, going to get the most bang for your buck when Johnny Newton is ready. When Johnny Newton is ramped up, and when you can see a defensive line that features Johnny Newton at left defensive end, just for argument's sake, Deron Payne at left defensive tackle, Jonathan Allen at right defensive tackle, or technically your three technique, and at right defensive end, you want to put Dorrance Armstrong sometimes there, you want to put Cleveland Farrell there,
you
want to put Dante Fowler there, you want to put Jamin Davis there, whatever you want to do. If you can get the look that I'm looking for, Johnny Newton left defensive end, or Deron Payne with Johnny Newton inside, but I think they're interchangeable and they probably can do both, and that's a way to get more extra mileage out of them. That's where I think you're going to get more bang for your buck, or at least have a chance to get bang for your buck out of Jonathan Allen and Deron Payne.
yes, you need them to be able to be helped schematically, but there's also the element of, hey, I just need you to be more disruptive. No matter if you're being double teamed, no matter if it's one on one, you better be winning a majority of your one on ones. I need you to be double teamed if you're going to be paid like this. That's the overall big picture problem, I think, with the team in terms of roster construction and who's the way the money is allocated across this roster. There's a lot of guys who aren't getting banged for your buck for. We'll talk about Terry as the show rolls on. I think he's another one of those dudes that isn't worth what he's getting paid, in my opinion, relative to the other guys in his position. But I think going back to it, when you invest this much, this heavily at one position, you got to get more out of these guys as we're talking about. But them relying on Johnny Newton, the premise of that to me is foolish because of the injury history, because of what he, I don't know.
Well, why do you think they drafted him where they drafted him?
Because they think if he's healthy, he could be great. But
right, but also interchangeable,
right.
And that extra thing to push Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne over the edge.
Exactly.
That's why. Because you're right, they're not a – look, Dallas's defense was based off of Micah Parsons being a chameleon and DeMarcus Lawrence lining up at the defensive end spot and bulldozing people, yeah. Right? That's what they're – that's the core tenet of what Dallas's Dan Quinn's Dallas defense was based on. Of course, there are other things, turnovers, ball hawks, this, that, and the other thing. Got it. This defense, to your point, is based when you inherit what you inherit, and the contracts are what they are. They were given by somebody else. When you inherit what you inherit, smart football people say, well, no. We're gonna ignore what those guys are and what has already been paid and what their talent is, and we're gonna do it a different way because that's the way we do it. No. You find a way to use what, unfortunately or fortunately, has already been invested in, and that's what I think they're trying to do. And I think that was part of the plan and the thinking with Johnny.
I'm glad
Newton.
You said that. What they're trying to do, because as we know, as I mentioned a moment ago, we're 2 weeks in. By week eight, the whole tenor of this conversation could be different.
It could be.
And it could be about, well, is it worth having both of them around? But we'll get to that when we get to
We will get to that. And yeah. We will get to how else to fix the defense. Is there just one fix? And your calls at 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. If you want to tweet, it's at @Nell_BTP. You know what that stands for, boys and girls. At WrestleMania 621, the radio station, at Team 980. Maddie is at Mr._Me93. I have no idea what that stands for on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Oh, you gotta be crazy in love, right? You got to be Beyonce crazy in love, as a great philosopher once said. Do you know who that great philosopher is, Matt?
Tell me.
Is it somebody who takes a lot of points from his co-host?
So you're in on this as well?
It's a nice way to say it.
Because it is the week of your birthday, the day before your birthday.
Wait, tomorrow's my birthday?
Isn't it?
Is it?
Damn. Yes, it is.
God.
Another year older, another year gray.
Yeah, that's for damn sure.
Waking up, hoping.
Wait till you get to 50 and almost 51, going on 51.
By the time.
Exactly, Jade. Everything hurts. Everything hurts.
It couldn't have been hurting too bad the way you were talking earlier.
Because I was tweeting at 4:30 in the morning because I was discovering crazy crap that you said on TV and sending it to Matt?
Crazy stuff that I said.
T-shirt slogans. Anyway.
I'm a marketing genius.
All right. Real quickly. Again, the numbers are what they are. They count for way too much of their salary cap in order to get this little production. It is pretty amazing that if you just use the pass rush win rate thing, that Jonathan Allen and not Daron Payne is in the top 20 for defensive tackles. And I mean, barely. He's got like three wins, I think on 20 rushes or whatever it is. And Daron Payne is not. They were both tied for 10th after week one. And now Daron is out of the top 20 and John is still in.
Daron is eighth, though, in run stop win rate.
Which is an even interesting number, right? Because if you'd say, all right, pass rush is definitely a problem. Well, guess what? Run blocking, or run stopping, I should say, defending has been a problem. And how is a guy like Daron Payne, who you would think, right, the Giants didn't run, like Devin Singletary did not chew up blades of grass by running toss pitch sweeps to the outside. He lined up and he ran it right at those guys, right at the core of the defense.
I think sometimes that's how you beat it, depending on how your opponents on the interior handle double teams. Phil Mathis plays a double team better than anybody on this team, I think.
Interesting.
From through the first 2 weeks, I think.
Is that
Phil
because
Mathis,
you played college football, that qualifies you as knowing
to know that? I mean, I guess so, right? Okay. But the way I play that position too now, but technique wise, like, he's done a really good job with that, and his length helps him out with that as well.
I told you Phil was having a pretty good training camp and a pretty good preseason, right? The old Wiley vet still knows a little bit of what they're talking about. All right, how do you fix the defense from this perspective? Is there only one main problem? Is there one big bugaboo out of everything else? A lot of people think it's just simply getting better outside corners. I think it's a much more nuanced and layered question than that. We'll tackle that next. Plus, we see y'all. We're going to get to you. Just hang on. We're coming at you 301-230-0980 on the Team 980, and we're always live and free on the Odyssey app.